some commentaries think that the him is actually a reference to Michael, the archangel, and that this angel came to aid Michael in his protection of Israel while they're under the Medo-Persians. Another way of looking at it is this angel arose to be an encouragement and a protection to Darius the Mede, because you had these demonic influences trying to, or attempting to influence the Persian and the Medo-Persian Empire. And that demonic influence is going to come out really well here in chapter 6. So remember back in Isaiah 14, Lucifer was attempting to influence the Babylonians. And you see this in chapter 3, where Nebuchadnezzar throws Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego into the fiery furnace, trying to wipe out these faithful Jews, and God prevents it. And now you've got this demonic influence, this demonic personage attempting to influence the Medo-Persians, and you're going to see that influence here in chapter 6. So the events in chapter 6 are really, there's this demonic influence behind these individuals trying to kill off Daniel. And this angel from chapter 10 is helping Michael and helping Darius to protect the Jews. So when you read through chapter 6, don't just read it from an earthly perspective. There's some spiritual battles going on here in this book. There's Lucifer influencing the king of Babylon in chapter 3. There's these demonic princes of Persia trying to influence Darius here in chapter 6. And this angel from chapter 10, along with Michael, are preventing that from happening. So there's a behind the scenes thing going on here. So in chapter 6, Darius is now in command, and it makes sense to the Babylonian Empire is done, the Medo-Persian Empire is now in power, so we've got to reorganize things. And it makes sense to Darius and to Cyrus, well, we've got some very qualified men already, so why don't we put them in charge? Now, keep in mind, Darius the Mede took over power in 539, which is 66 years after Daniel is taken. So Daniel is probably in his mid to late 80s. And in fact, in chapter 5, it seems like Daniel was retired until the queen mother brought him back, and he has to confront Belshazzar and kind of choose him out, rather annoyed at him. And now Darius is going to take this 86 to 90 year old man and put him in charge of all of the Medo-Persian Empire. And I'm going to stop this and give you another picture of the Medo-Persian Empire. This is not a small empire here. This is something that's pretty extensive. So the Persian Empire, I'll bring this over here. The Persian Empire is this entire bluish green area. It's a vast empire. It goes all the way from Greece to India. So it's an enormous territory. It covers what is now Greece and Turkey, northern Egypt, Libya, Armenia, Syria, Iran, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and some of the other stands up in the north. So it's a vast territory. And Darius and Cyrus have to find some way of administering this territory. So they assign 120 what are called satraps. And these are guys who would be in charge of the financial, the taxations, the ruling, the governors, the mayors and whatnot over this vast territory. And so they're going to be in charge of the whole kingdom. And then over them are going to be three commissioners, one of whom is going to be Daniel. So you got the 120 satraps, you got the three commissioners, one of whom is Daniel, and then you've got Darius. So Daniel, this 86 at least year old man, is now back in the game. And all these satraps are accountable to these three commissioners so that the king doesn't suffer any loss. And he says, verse 3, Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners. To such a point, he says, among the commissioners and the satraps, because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. So it's going to be Darius, then Daniel, then the two commissioners, and then the 120 satraps. And so Daniel's going to be in charge of this enormous territory. And the other commissioners, they're not too keen on that. And neither are the some of the satraps. So the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. Daniel has been a faithful servant the entire time he's been in Babylon. The entire reign of Nebuchadnezzar and the kings after him, even into Belshazzar's reign. And now he's a faithful servant under Darius and Cyrus. And so these guys are trying to find some ground to accuse him in regard to government affairs. They're trying to, in their mind, they're thinking, everybody's corrupt. Everybody's got a price. And so we just need to find what Daniel's price is. We just need to find that little chink in his armor. And then we've got it. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. And you notice the difference there, negligence and corruption. Daniel did everything he was supposed to do. He wasn't negligent. And he didn't do anything he wasn't supposed to do. He wasn't corrupt. So he was faithful in doing everything and in not doing things that he shouldn't have done. So these guys could not find any ground regarding government affairs of corruption or negligence. So they admit that. We're not going to find any ground of accusation against Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. And you wonder, what does that have to do with anything? Why would Darius care about Daniel and Daniel's God? But these guys got a plan. They know Daniel. They've been watching him. You know, some of these guys have been carryovers from the Babylonian Empire. Some of these guys had probably known Daniel for decades. They know his routine. They know every morning and noon and evening he goes home and he prays. So maybe we can con the king into doing something stupid. And that's what they do. So these commissioners and the satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him. King Darius, live forever. So all of the commissioners, all the commissioners of the kingdom The prefects, the satraps, the high officials, the governors, they've consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you for 30 days shall be cast into the lion's den. So they know we can't catch Daniel with regard to government affairs, but maybe we can catch him with regard to religious affairs. So King Darius, we want to honor you. We recognize your divine powers. We recognize that you are a representative of the gods, and we think that you should establish a statute that no one prays to anyone, god or man, but you, the representative of the gods, for 30 days. So we want to honor you with this petition, this statute. And if somebody does break it, we want them cast into the lion's den. So, O king, establish the injunction, sign the document, so that it may not be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which may not be revoked. If you go back to Esther chapter 1. Now, remember, Esther, let me bring up my other... Esther, she was in the Medo-Persian, or she was actually in the Persian Empire, and okay, so Esther would have been down here. So Here's Darius the Mede, here's Cyrus, then a number of others, and then Esther comes along under King Xerxes. He's one of the Persians. And in Esther chapter 1, verse 19, this is after Vashti kind of rebelled. And so... if it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him. Let it be written in the laws of Persia and Media so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti may no longer come into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. In chapter 8 of Esther, you've got the same thing. Here, this is where King Ahasuerus, Xerxes the First, tells Mordecai and Esther, write to the Jews as you see fit in the king's name, seal it with the king's signet, for a decree which is written in the name of the king and sealed with his signet may not be revoked. So apparently there was some rule in the Medo-Persian Empire that once the king issued an edict, it can never be undone, which is, you know, frankly, just stupid. But hey, that's what these guys did. We issue a decree, and not even the king can change his mind. So they convince Darius to do this, and Darius, he just doesn't think this through. He seems like a really gullible kind of guy. So Darius, verse 9, signed the document, the injunction, and Daniel knew it. So when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he could have, for the next 30 days, not prayed or changed his routine in some way so that no one would know about it, or went off someplace into the forest so that no one would see him. He could have done something, but he didn't. And Daniel had the mindset, kind of like the apostles in Acts chapter 5. We must obey God rather than man. You're telling me that I can't pray to anyone but the king. Well, I'm not going to do that. And I'm not going to hide when I seek my God. I'm not going to go off into the woods or hide in some remote place where nobody's going to find me or see me. I am going to keep on my routine every day, three times a day. I'm going to seek the Lord like I've always done since I was a child. Nothing is going to change. I am going to obey God rather than man. And Daniel's actually following the instructions that he got from Jeremiah. If you go back to Jeremiah chapter 29, at some point, Jeremiah sent letters or a letter to Babylon. And it says in Jeremiah 29, these are the words of the letter which Jeremiah the prophet sent from Jerusalem to the rest of the elders of the exile, the priests, the prophets, and all the people whom Nebuchadnezzar had taken into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. So Jeremiah writes a letter to the exiles. Jeremiah is in Jerusalem. He sends this letter to Babylon, and verse 3, it was sent by the hands of a number of individuals. And in the letter, Jeremiah tells the exiles in Babylon, verse 5, build houses, live in them, plant gardens, eat their produce, take wives, become the fathers of sons and daughters, take wives for your sons, give your daughters to husbands, and so on and so forth. And then he says, verse 10, when the 70 years have been completed, I will visit you. I know the plans that I have for you. Plans for welfare and not for calamity, to give you a future and a hope. It's this letter that Daniel refers back to in chapter 9. He realizes the 70 years are up. So one of the things that he says, verse 12 here, you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. And so Daniel is doing exactly what God told him to do. Seek me. Find you. When you seek, you'll find. And so Daniel's going to keep right on praying, regardless of what Darius says, regardless of what these other commissioners and satraps say. I am going to pray to God. I'm going to keep on praying to God like I've always done. So it says, this is verse 10, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. And in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, which is kind of an interesting thing. If you look at 2 Chronicles chapter 6, when Solomon is dedicating the temple, he says in verse 34, when your people go out to battle against their enemies, by whatever way you shall send them, and they pray to you toward this city which you've chosen and the house which I built for your name, then hear from heaven their prayer and their supplication and maintain their cause. When they sin against you, for there is no man who does not sin, and you're angry with them and deliver them to an enemy so that they take them away captive to a land far off or near, Babylon, if they take thought in the land where they are captive and repent and make supplication to you in the land of your captivity, saying, we've sinned, we've committed iniquity, have acted wickedly, and so on and so forth. And he says, end of verse 28, and pray toward their land which you have given to their fathers and the city which you have chosen and toward the house which I have built for your name, than hear from heaven. So Daniel is doing exactly that. Daniel's got this roof chamber. He's going up there. He's praying toward Jerusalem, just like Solomon suggested. And he kept on praying, kneeling on his knees three times a day, morning, noon, evening. So he would take little time off from his duties, go home, pray when he gets up, pray when he goes at noon, praise in the evening, praying and giving thanks as he had been doing previously. Nothing changed. Here's a faithful man. He knew that this document was signed. He knew that there was the possibility that if he got caught, he would be executed. And he was going to do it anyway. I'm not going to change my routine because the king signed this document. This is what my God wants me to do. This is what I've always done. I'm not changing. Even if it costs me my life, I am not going to change. So then these men, okay, and I've got some pictures here for you. So here's Daniel praying, and here's Daniel praying again, and here in the background, these guys who are hiding, just they knew Daniel's routine. Okay, we know he goes home every morning, noon, and evening. We know he prays. We know the time he prays. We know where he prays. We even know the direction in which he prays. And we know Daniel. Nothing's going to change. So these guys, they hid in the closet, and they found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. And so they sneak back to the king, and they spoke to the about the king's injunction, and they kind of act all innocent and whatnot. King, didn't you sign an injunction? You know, it seems like we remember you signed this injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you for 30 days is to be cast into the lion's den. Isn't that right? I mean, or are we wrong? I mean, did we miss something here? And the king says, oh, that statement is true. According to the laws of Medo-Persians, can't be revoked. Well, then they spring the trap. They answered and spoke to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah. You know, they don't call him one of our fellow commissioners. He's one of those exiles from Judah, which took place 66 years earlier. He's one of those guys. He pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction that you sign. He keeps making his petition three times a day. So here's this exiled Jew who's not even paying attention to you, the brand new ruler of the new Medo-Persian Empire. He's ignoring you. As soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. He liked Daniel. And it suddenly dawned on him, now I know why these guys made me sign that thing. They conned me. And I can't revoke it. This has to be seen through. And so he's distressed. He's trying to deliver Daniel. Even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. And these other men came by agreement, recognized, and now they're getting pushy. And these guys probably should have thought this one through a little bit. Recognize, O king, that it's a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed. You signed it, you have to go through with it. And I'm thinking, yeah, or what? What are you going to do if I don't? Depose me? So the king gave orders, and Daniel is brought in and cast into the lion's den. And the king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." Interesting. Remember back in chapter 3 with Nebuchadnezzar? What God is there who can deliver you from the furnace of fire? What God can deliver you out of my hands? And here's Darius, "Your God, whom you serve, will deliver you." Another way of actually translating that is, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, must himself deliver you. I can't, so if any deliverance, it has to come from him." So stone is brought, laid over the lion's den, and here's Daniel just sitting there with the lions. So he's in the lion's den. Never been close to a lion, so I'm not sure what they smell like, but the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signet rings of his nobles so that nothing would be changed. He went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, no entertainment, his sleep fled from him. And this is probably something that the king has never experienced. You know, these guys lived rather lavish, posh lives. And so now he's actually fasting and praying, no entertainment. He's maybe even calling on the God of Daniel to deliver Daniel. And so, keep on losing my place. Oh, there it is. At dawn, the king went in haste to the lion's den. So apparently, I think Darius probably believed that God was certainly able to do it. I'm not sure he believed he would do it, but he believed he was certainly able to do it. So he goes in haste to the lion's den, and when he came near to the den, he cried out with a troubled voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Now, I don't know if Daniel answered him right away, maybe just kept quiet for a moment to give him a little panic, but, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths." So here's a picture of the angel keeping the lions at bay. And here's a picture of Darius looking down. "Inasmuch," and here's why, "inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, I didn't do anything worthy of death. And also toward you, O king, I've committed no crime. I have been a faithful servant of yours since the beginning." And even though we've only known each other for a very short time, you know, you've recognized that. Word got around from the previous kingdom. Yeah, this guy, Daniel, he's a good egg. He's faithful. He'll do exactly what needs to be done in your service. "So I've committed no crime." So the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken out of the den. Now, once Daniel was put into the den, the law was fulfilled. The law only required that Darius put Daniel into the lion's den. So now that Daniel's out, the law is fulfilled. The law didn't require Daniel to die. The law only required Daniel to be put into the lion's den. And in fact, Darius probably could have lowered him down and then brought him back up an hour later, but for whatever reason, he kept him up there overnight. And he's taken out of the lion's den, and it says, no injury whatever was found on him. Just like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They don't even smell like smoke. The hair on their heads aren't even singed. They still have their eyebrows. No injury whatever, because he had trusted in his God. So now Darius is going to get his revenge. The king gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel. And they cast them, their children, their wives, into the lion's den. Bit excessive, but these are the Medo-Persians. I mean, the Greeks, the Persians, the Romans, they all did it. If one person sins in a family, you get rid of the entire family. So that's what he's doing. These guys maliciously accused Daniel, so we're going to eliminate the entire family. They had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. So they're dropped down. They don't even hit the bottom. And the lions, I mean, just overpower and crush them. So Darius, and you know, think about like Haman, you know, same period of time with Esther. You want to hang Mordecai? Well, not going to happen. So Haman gets hung on his own gallows, and you know, kind of goes along with the Abrahamic covenant. I'll bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. You don't mess with the children of God. Just a side note, interesting verse in Deuteronomy 19, verse 16. If a malicious witness, and this is for the Jews. I mean, this had nothing to do with the Medo-Persians, but they kind of adopted this philosophy. If a malicious witness rises up against a man to accuse him of wrongdoing, both men who have the dispute shall stand before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who will be in office in those days. The judges shall investigate thoroughly. If the witness is a false witness and he's accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him just as he had intended to do to his brother. And that's exactly what Darius did to these guys. You want me to throw Daniel into the lion's den? Okay, I did that. He survived. You're a malicious witness. Let's see what happens to you and your children and your families. They didn't survive. So Darius, in verse 25, wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in the land. So that entire vast kingdom, Darius is sending these letters to the four points of the compass. I make a decree, and this is one of those decrees that can't be revoked, that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. He is, and notice how he describes him. He is the living God, unlike my gods, which are not alive, or the gods of the nations. He is a God enduring forever. He's an eternal God. He's not the creation of man. His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. It actually echoes some of the things that Nebuchadnezzar said back in chapter 4 after he lost his mind and then gained his sanity back. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. did that back in chapter 2, who is, or chapter 3, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel's God is the living God. Daniel's God is a forever God. He's an eternal God. He's not the creation of some silversmith or goldsmith. Daniel's God's kingdom is one which will never be destroyed. His dominion is forever. He rescues, he delivers. Just exactly what Nebuchadnezzar said to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in chapter 3, what he says after his insanity bout in chapter 4. So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel, he doesn't get to retire. Now, the next chapter, we probably, sometime I'm going to teach Daniel, but I'm going to do it in chronological order. Because remember, Daniel is not in chronological order. Chapter 7 actually takes place at the very beginning of Belshazzar's reign. So chapter 7 actually takes place like 15 years before the lion's den. And chapter 8 takes place 12 years before the lion's den. And chapter 9 takes place in the same year as the lion's den. So sometime I'm gonna do Daniel chronologically. Not sure why it's in this order, but anyway, any questions on Daniel?
So Jeff, we're gonna have,
go ahead, Dave.
Sorry. Jeff, we're going to have two emperors in heaven then. What about Cyrus?
I honestly don't know about Darius. I think he makes an acknowledgement, kind of like what Nebuchadnezzar did back in chapters 2 and 3. But Nebuchadnezzar didn't come to a faith moment until chapter 4. And Darius kind of echoes those pre-faith type of words. So I'm not sure about Darius.
Okay.
I certainly think Nebuchadnezzar's going to be there. And I think probably given what Ezra says about Cyrus, that Cyrus is going to be there.
Mm. But Cyrus led off other exiles. Didn't he send them home to worship their own gods in these other countries?
Well, Cyrus pretty much sent anyone who wanted to leave home.
Mm.
But Cyrus is the one Ezra talks about as acknowledging that God has called him to send the Jews back specifically. Mm. And God calls him his anointed, his shepherd. So I tend to think Cyrus is probably going to be there. Can't be sure, but I certainly think Nebuchadnezzar is going to be there.
Is there a Jeremiah in the life of, I say Jeremiah in quotes, Jeremiah in the life of Darius, where 70 years before Jeremiah, gave the news that Cyrus later, 70 years later, was going to release the Jews?
Well, Isaiah wrote that.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was Isaiah.
Yeah, there's no mention of Darius in any of the other prophets.
Okay.
Except after the fact. Haggai and Zechariah mention them, but that's after the fact.
Has any archaeological evidence been found for these events? With Cyrus, we have visited like the British Museum in London, and they do have the Cyrus cylinder there where all these events that Cyrus did are recorded.
Yeah, I don't know.
I see.
Sorry about that. Jeff, I had a question for you. In Jeremiah 29, this is Ray. You mentioned in verses 10, 11, 12 about, it says here, verse 12 says, then you will call upon me and go and pray to me and I will listen to you. Was that specifically Daniel? Did the Lord foresee that that would be Daniel that would be doing that? Or would it be any Jewish person that seems to be dialed into what the Lord's plan was? Or was it specifically written, in your opinion, about Daniel calling on the Lord?
I think it was any Jew that was in tune to, that actually listened to Jeremiah and the other prophets. Daniel's the only one that, you know, actually wrote about it, but I think that's a reference to any Jew who realizes, hey, we've been here 70 years. And I think a lot of these Jews were, I shouldn't say a lot, some of the Jews were very much like Daniel in that they were prayers from the beginning. And they listened to Jeremiah when Jeremiah said, if you want to survive this onslaught of Babylonians, you need to surrender. And they surrendered and went away to Babylon, and now Jeremiah is encouraging them. So they were actually listeners to God before they were taken. And so they're just carrying on like Daniel. You know, we've been praying to God since our youth. Why would we stop? And so they realized, yeah, 70 years are up and we're going to keep on praying.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Very nice, Jeff. We're learning a bit more every week. You want to take over, Joel?
So we need to see some pictures.
Devin, you're going to show your picture. Devin, can you show your picture? Yeah. Sure, sure, right here.
Ooh.
Can you see that?
Move it up. Okay.
That's a really hairy lion, Devin. Yeah. With sharp teeth.
Yeah. Yep. Good job, Debbie.
I have a picture too. Can anybody hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a picture. If you like it. See, there's Daniel, and he's petting a lion, and the lion's happy, and Daniel's happy. And one other thing, Daniel's sucking a root beer sucker right there. So that's Daniel, and the lion's content. Content. Okay.
Pretty good.
Do I win?
That's British Museum quality.
Okay.
This is mine.
Okay, move to focus to
And this is Jacob's. It's not that museum quality though.
Nice colors.
Yeah. That's fierce looking lion.
Cool. Okay.
Oh, very good.
That's very good.
That's a good job, yeah.
Very good.
Good line. Good line. Line.
Daniel looks a bit like your daddy with his beard.
So, Neil?
Yes.
Good.
Okay, cool.
Good.
Victoria's.
I can.
Good.
I like.
Victoria, did you have
Victoria?
Is that one. All right, yep.
Who's it? Who's the blue guy up there? Is that Darius?
Okay.
Yes, Darius.
Darius. Okay.
The blue guy up there.
Yeah.
Good hands.
Good job.
So next week.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We got some more pictures.
We do? Okay.
Coming.
Let's see.
It's lab day.
Spotlight. Okay, here we go.
Ooh. Ooh.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And it's a dark cave, definitely.
Yeah. Pretty fierce lions. Then we have Elsie's. She's not here right this second.
VeggieTales version.
You might recognize Larry the cucumber.
Just to bring your picture.
And then Lucy's.
Oh, good. Good. That's a VeggieTales.
And then this is Lucy.
Good job. Wow.
Look at that. That's clever, God. Lucy. Yeah. Beautiful. All right, kids, I want you to write your name on them and put a date on them and put them in your clip and keep file.
So next week, this is going to be a bit more difficult. Next week, there are four beasts. And... the first one is a lion with wings. The second is a lopsided bear. The third is a four-headed, four-winged leopard. But then the fourth one, it's called a dreadful and terrifying beast, but we don't know what it is. So your job, you can draw the other three, but I want to know what you think the fourth beast looks like.
Isla's got one. Right. Let's look at Isla's real quick.
Oh, well, there you go.
Isla, that's brilliant.
Good job, Isla.
Good.
Very good.
Well done.
Put your name on it.
That's a good one.
So, Jeff, are we to draw this dreadful and terrible beast? Is that it for next time, or just guess?
Well, you can draw all four, but I specifically want your impression of what the fourth one looks like. So
we could just do the fourth one, right?
Yeah. I'm more interested in the fourth one, but if you want to draw all four, that's fine too.
So John Duckhorn, start working. You have to count the horns, Donna.
Right.
I will.
I wanted to quickly announce that Daniel Adset has passed his, he was defending his dissertation. He passed with flying colors. That's what he said.
Oh, super.
Today, yeah.
So now he's Dr. Adset?
I guess he's fully on his way. Maybe Ruth would know. I guess he's fully on his way.